Welcome, everybody, to The Rad Life, the only talk radio show that takes you along with host and age explorer Rod Gontos on his continuing journey of discovery into life's challenges, opportunities, options, and all the latest and greatest things that come with getting older. The Rad Life is brought to you this week by Your Home for a Lifetime, a company dedicated to empowering you to stay safely, independently, and comfortably in your own home. And now here is your host, Rad Gontos.
Good afternoon, Paul.
Good afternoon. You got me doing everything here. We're a little late trying to get the cameras up and the pictures taken and everything here.
Do you get it? Is it out of your system now? Are you done?
Well, you know, I'm 61 years old now, so you have to.
Okay, so you know what? I kind of warned our guest today that you just tend to have a repetitiveness, but I think that might be
an age
thing, too.
It comes with age.
It comes with age, you know. Let me tell you again for the 100th time about how old I am. Paul, if you haven't met Paul, that's Paul Roberts over there. Right? Wave to the camera, Paul. Come over here. People don't see you.
Nobody ever sees me.
Okay, so see where my finger's pointing if you're following us on YouTube? They're over there. Is our poster child baby boomer, 61-year-old Paul Roberts, who is actually...
Let's put the camera on. There we go.
He is the backbone of OC Talk Radio.
That's right.
And in many ways, this show has been lovingly referred to as Paul's therapy session.
That's right.
Okay. So Paul is great to have because I'm 52 years old, not 61 years old. So he has...
You're a wannabe.
Yeah,
you're
I'm a baby boomer wannabe. Right. So... Moving right
along. As is everybody
moving
in the
right
studio
along.
Here. Look at none of there's
right.
no not a baby boomer in the studio but me
oh,
here.
Oh Lord. Okay. So but he actually
what a good looking group of people here. Well that's why they keep me off the camera here.
Are we done? Okay. But he actually has a lot of insight from his own personal experience of taking care of his parents. And he's currently taking care of his aunt.
Right. 92.
92 in the desert. And so it's interesting because this whole thing of aging and taking care of elderly and aging, you know, we are kind of at an end of a certain end user profile, if you will, like
end user profile.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, okay, or customer profile or client profile, right? But there's also, you know, I'm 52. In five to, you know, it's already a thing of interest to me because I'm dealing with it with my parents. But then in 10 years, it's going to be me that's on that receiving end.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I always tell people, you know, for years and years and years, it almost felt like other than for the nursing aspect of it or the caregiving aspect of it, the policy and the societal realities of this aging thing has not really been something we have addressed.
Hasn't hit home until you have to go through
so,
it.
So everything that we do today is beneficial not only for those that we love and care for, but also for ourselves. And so there's a lot of room for innovation. The requirements and the needs and the expectations of people as they get older has changed over time. And so, you know, we have in the studio today, and I'll let them introduce themselves in a minute here, but we have representatives from Grand Care Health, and it's basically home care. But I told them, I said, you know, we've had other home care agencies in the studio. Everybody says, oh, you know, it's home care. I get older, I need home care, or I'm going to put somebody in a facility, you know, and just, I know that. And then it's like a matter of, you know, and Paul will ask it, so I'll ask it before he does. Okay, how do I pay for it, right? Because that's the, you know, it's like, okay, fine, yeah, I know I need it, but how do I pay for it? I don't have any money. I'm not working. My portfolio took a hit.
Nobody else paid for it because everybody assumes Medicare pays for it, somebody pays for it.
I gave to everybody. But nobody's giving to me now, you know, and all right. that stuff comes in. So you guys do it in a different way. But before we get there, I just want to again remind everybody who's listening why home care is so critical and important and what some of the new things that have happened as far as regulations relevant to home care, which astounds me, have not been in place and until very recently, mm-hmm. right? But that really is great because it's the safety. It's a very vulnerable population. So these sort of added regulations and protections that are now in place mm-hmm. is very beneficial.
So let's go around the room.
And Kyle, I'll start with you. Why don't you introduce yourself? And please mention also, you know, what you do at Grand Care and, you know, what maybe a little bit of background, like how did you get to be at Grand Care?
Sure, thank you. Yep. So my name is Kyla Hislop, and I'm actually the patient relations...
A little closer. Get you a little closer.
Sorry about that. Representative for Grand Care Health.
Okay.
And a little bit about myself and my background and why I'm in this market is I cared for a family member, you know, with my mother in home. We took care of my grandmother. And, you know, just watching how taxing that was, not just emotionally, financially, and how it affects, you know, all everybody involved. Not just the patient, not just the caregivers, but the family unit as a whole. And so it just really opened up my eyes to, the little help that's out there or education as that process is coming around and how you have to navigate through that by yourself with your family members sometimes. And people don't really know where to go to get questions answered. And sometimes you feel really, really alone.
And before you move on, I just have to ask you, were you as ill prepared as I was when when my parents started to go downhill and my mom had Parkinson's and Alzheimer's, all sorts of things? I didn't know what to do, where to go. I had no idea how little resources. I had no idea how expensive it was. I had no idea the emotional roller coaster I'd be on and they'd be on as my big, strong parents are in diapers and I'm taking care of them.
How long ago was that, Paul?
Yeah.
You started taking care of, I think it was your dad first, right?
My mom first and then my dad. So it started probably about 5-6 years ago, really heavily, but probably more than that, maybe 10 years ago.
And Kyle, my mom first. When did you deal with this with your grandmother?
Ours started, I would say about 20 years ago that it started, and we were in the care process for, you know, well over 8 years.
Wow.
Dealing with multiple different medical conditions. And my grandmother was actually a psychiatric nurse for most of her life.
Interesting.
So thought that she had prepared.
Yeah.
To find out, she really hadn't prepared at all. And that was very shocking to see that you kind of leave that in the hands of the family member, thinking that, you know, they've taken care of things and you trust in that. But as that mental or cognitive state starts to pass, and the condition starts to worsen through time.
And like she said, it takes years.
You
know, in the old days, people would start to go downhill and they die in a few months or they die in a year. Now that goes on over a year. I'm trying to think. My mom probably for 10, 15 years was in this condition. Mm-hmm. And more it became my dad's full-time job, and then it became my full-time job. And
you took care of it. You didn't have care, right? You were the caregiver, right,
Paul? I was the caregiver. I'm an only child, and I assumed my dad was an executive with a big car company. I assumed he took care of it very well planned. But when it came down to this, he had no long-term health care. He didn't have the money to take care of it. He didn't have any plan to take care of it, and because he never thought this would happen.
Yeah.
And so Kyla, in your case, were you guys, you and your mom, basically the primary caregivers?
We were, yes. And, I was young at the time, and as I, got older and was going through school and things, a lot of it fell on my mother.
Sure.
And so, she wasn't working, which affects the income coming into the home. And
the whole home dynamic.
The whole home dynamic. And then the mental toll that it took on my mom during that time was even harder to watch. Mm-hmm. That was even harder to watch, and how she was unable to provide the care that we wanted.
Mm-hmm.
It couldn't afford to get outside assistance, and just what that does to her.
When you turn to your other friends and family, because I found this, I don't have any other siblings, but just other friends, and I'd try and talk about this. I mean, they were sympathetic, but nobody really wanted to talk about this. And if they did, they didn't certainly have any idea what I should do or how to do it.
Was that a similar experience for you?
Yeah. And, we have multiple family members in the area. I mean, we're talking miles away, down the street.
Mm-hmm.
And not once came by for assistance. So, I think noticing, it's just very sad. It's a sad situation to be in. So I dedicated my time and my life now to helping educate families and helping being a resource to the community and through Grand Care Health Services, being able to actually assist them make some of those decisions and help turn that corner.
Well, I have to tell you, I want to just come clean here. There was an underhandedness in my question, because what we have found is that everybody who is involved in this has a personal story of how they got involved. That's not to say that people are not sort of engaged in being of service and pursue this, but in many cases, 1 degree of separation, 2 degrees of separation, they have a personal reference point. of having seen a loved one deteriorate or not get the care that they needed or not been able to be there for somebody, and so they basically shift into this sort of industry.
It doesn't seem like something they just answer an ad.
There's a labor of love involved, and there's, I think, a sense of gratification and payment that is not financial that they get out of being in this, being of service.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah. So that's why I asked you, because I figured, and I think as we go around, I would be surprised if we don't have some, because it's pretty, I mean, it's an overwhelming emotional thing to be engaged in. I mean, let's just be honest, right?
And it's not like selling insurance or something here.
And even, and not to take away from the personal, you know, heartache of seeing somebody who is blood related to you or family member that deteriorates, but that at some point ends.
Yeah.
But when you're actually in the service of providing this kind of care to multiple people, it's constant.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll come back to it in the end, and because I think what we don't always ask caregivers and people involved in the caregiving industry, and I want you guys to just think about this and we'll address it at the end, is what do you do to give to yourself so that you can continue to be a functional giver in that capacity? Because it's not an endless battery that just, you know, it has to be recharged at some point.
Yeah.
Right? Okay. So let's go around. And Amy, you want to talk about how you got involved in this and how you got to, what do you do at Grand Care?
Sure. My name is Amy Tran, and I'm a strategic physician specialist.
Okay.
I work with Kyla, and my responsibility and what I do is to work closely with doctors that do have the demographic of patients that we can help educate and be a resource to them.
So what kind of doctors do you usually work with?
A lot of concierge doctors, mm-hmm. Internal med, focusing on geriatric patients,
mm-hmm.
Even pain management doctors as well.
So I have to interrupt again, because one of the things that shocked me, as my parents deteriorated, I immediately went to their doctors and said, what do I do? And they all shrugged and said, I don't know. And a couple of them literally said, well, they have a house, don't they? Yeah, just sell the house and put them in a home. Next, there was very little information. The doctors didn't seem to know what to, and yet many times when I go see the doctor, they say, well, you got to do something. You know, your mom's deteriorated, your dad's deteriorated, you got to do something. I'm like, what? Where am I going to come up with the money? What am I going to do, and how am I going to pay for it? Nobody ever wanted to have that discussion with me.
Well, and probably, I think, maybe in the past, Paul, that there wasn't that cross-industry reach
mm-hmm.
to educate the doctor, at mm-hmm. least those that are wanting to know and want to engage further with the care of that
patient. So are you guys on the cutting edge doing this, or is this becoming commonplace? Are more and more people doing what you're doing and reaching out to the doctors?
Was it still something
to educate
that's
them?
Not
I think with our unique program, I don't think a lot of other agencies do this, because we really focus on the behavioral health entity
mm-hmm.
side of it and the detox. And a lot of times the assumption is the doctor would already know, but mm-hmm. but oftentimes they don't have the resources or the understanding of how in depth it would be of a resource to the families
mm-hmm.
when they're undergoing these type of situations from start to finish.
Right, and he's a doctor. He's supposed to know, or she's a doctor. They're supposed to know everything, right?
Mm-hmm.
But that this is one of those aspects that I think is very specialized, and if you're so focused on the medical side of it, that you may not have that, but if you're interested in, now at least you have a resource. And I want to go back, we'll get back to the behavioral aspect,
okay.
But I want to move over. Okay, how did you get involved in this? Senior care?
It all started with a family member that's really close to me that had to deal with depression
mm-hmm.
and addiction. And even though I was in the healthcare industry for many years, I was at a loss not knowing what to do or where to go. And it was my goal to educate and be a resource to any families out there that need help, that can afford it and cannot afford it. And the great thing about our company is that we work very closely with different demographic senses of people, population, that we want to help everyone or as much as we can.
You know, we had, was it last week that we had Senior Serve here?
Last week, yeah.
It was last week we had Senior Serve here, and we were talking about...
Meals on Wheels and other things
about,
do,
yeah. We were talking about loneliness. We were talking about depression. You know, we were talking about some of the stuff that doesn't even usually get mentioned. You hear so much about Alzheimer's. You may hear about differentiated forms of memory, cognitive memory problems. You know, and so, oh, why there's dementia, there's Alzheimer's. And, you know, but there's things like loneliness, shut-ins, you know, depression, isolation, all this stuff that doesn't get talked about. Well, and you're touching on some of that because in some cases, then you do have that depression. You do have that addictiveness mm-hmm. to stuff. It's very easy to have, you know, with prescription drugs even for seniors, mm-hmm. that, you know, people are off. I saw something the other day on TV that I thought was very fascinating, interesting, that it was being sold. And, of course, it's targeting baby boomers, not even targeting people that are in housing. I don't know if you guys saw this thing. It's like a little cylinder that has these little plastic containers in it that are labeled Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
Dispensers.
Mm-hmm.
That you literally can take one out, like on Monday. Oh, it's Monday. I'm going to take this out and I can put it in my purse.
Yes.
And they're like, oh, it's shaped. You can put it in for a guy. You could put it in his jacket. Mm-hmm. And then you refill and put it up at the top. And on the actual dispenser, it says, you know, like afternoon, morning, whatever. Right? Mm-hmm. So I thought it was kind of interesting to see some of this stuff start to permeate into mm-hmm. almost like retail consumer products,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yes.
Because it's so easy. I mean, I remember a couple of years ago where there was, I think it was Philips that had the automatic dispenser mm-hmm. that you would put all the pills in and then you would program it so mm-hmm. that way, at least in a facility, there could never be over medication or under medication or missed medication periods. So all of this stuff we don't tend to talk about usually.
Right.
So I appreciate you sharing, and thank you for being candid about how you got there, because I think that's a very important aspect that never gets talked about.
And I have one other thing I have to raise that I saw with my mother in particular. My mother was a drug addict at the end. She was completely addicted to a whole host of medications that had been prescribed to her by different physicians for different times or for different reasons and then never taken away. And my parents, being the old generation, well, the doctor says you should take this, and she took it forever and ever and ever. Nobody ever analyzed what was the... when you mix this chemical cocktail together, what it did. But she looked like a zombie, and she was on drugs. And, like, what's the one they abused for years that we used to give housewives in the 60s or 70s? And
Prozac?
Not Prozac, no, but the one before that. I don't know. I don't know. Whatever it was.
Valium.
And she was on
Valium.
Valium. My mother was on Valium for 30 years. And the doctor who gave it to her died. And so she moved out here. And finally I asked one of the doctors, why is she on Valium? He said, I have no idea.
Mm-hmm.
But at this point, she's so addicted to it, why even take her off of it here?
Right.
Valium.
That's why it's so important to educate not just and focus on the patient, but also their family. Because
mm-hmm.
a lot of times, even though, and we see this very often, where the family lives with them, mm-hmm. but they don't have that
awareness.
Comfort or just somebody, a companion for them.
Yeah.
And a lot of times, you know, that's when the depression escalates to the next level.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just supporting the family, too, because they don't really know what to do. They feel like they see them every day, but they're kind of disengaged.
Well, I have a personal sort of an observer, very, very close to me, a family member, where the caring for the senior person in the house becomes almost like part of a to-do list.
Yes.
Because they have so many other things that are on to-do lists, and especially, let's say, you know, I mean, most would they say the sort of the typical profile of a caregiver tends to be women in their 40s or 50s. They've got kids. They're going to school.
Right.
Husband, in some cases, they're working as well. And then now they basically have this added to-do item, which is taking care of that senior person in the household. And it becomes I check that off the list. I check that off the list. But to your point, that companionship component, mm-hmm. which cannot be just, I'll fit it in when I can.
Right.
Right? And there's never enough time anyway, right? That is an important factor, because the alternative side effect of not having that is the depression,
mm-hmm.
is anything else, the addictiveness. And I'll tell you, the addictiveness could be, you know, you're talking about your mom with prescription drugs.
Yeah.
It could be getting on a bus and going to Pechanga
mm-hmm.
and spending all the money that you have, because that somehow gives you some socialization aspect,
right.
and a sense of control that you're doing something, at least momentarily. And then you got a happy smile on your face as you're riding the bus back with.
Why do you think all those casinos are out in Palm Springs here?
Yeah, yes,
right.
Yeah.
So,
that's true.
Yeah. So anyway, that's great. Thank you, Amy. Johnny Clay, sitting behind me, and
We save the best to last.
What do you do at Grand Care, Johnny?
I am the regional director of client relations. It's a long title.
Okay.
Yes.
And what does it really mean?
What it means is that I go out and I support all of the staff that's working throughout the San Diego, Orange County, and Los Angeles office.
Sure, because you guys expanded. I think you guys were started up here, right, and then just expanded also into San Diego County?
No, we actually started in L.A. County.
Okay.
And we also have an office in San Diego County. We actually expanded into Orange County.
Oh, okay. Well, welcome to Orange County. How many people do you have that you basically oversee and guide, Johnny?
I have about 12 people that I oversee right now.
Okay.
And what do you do when you I'm still lost. Do you support them? Will you buy them coffee?
I just buy them coffee and listen to them.
Make sure they get to the radio show for interviews.
No, I do a lot. In terms of support, it's an overall support. So I have a background in nursing. I started in nursing. Okay. We talk about how did you get into this business? I started nursing many, many years ago, probably about 30 years ago. And I had had, my father had had several medical issues, and I decided I wanted to help people. And so I got into nursing. I ended up getting into ortho and ER and different places on the floor that I worked. And I found my love when I went into the geriatric psych unit. I started to work with dementia and Alzheimer's. And you're very lucky if you can find your passion and actually get paid for it. And that's exactly what I did. I started to work in senior mental health. And I noticed that as I was working in the hospitals, there was sort of a disconnect between the patients that were getting discharged and the facilities that we were sending them to, the care that was being sought after they got discharged. We noticed that we had a lot of clients that were coming in and out of the hospital. Mm-hmm. And so I started to wonder what was happening basically outside when they got outside, what kind of care was being provided for them. And so that's when I saw that.
You know, I have heard that exact disconnect, about that disconnect. I've been involved sort of in senior industry from the aging in place, from home modifications and stuff, since 2008, okay? And to do that in California in 2008, you might as well be basically, covered wagon days, and you're heading to somewhere that doesn't exist, because nobody wants to talk about aging. Mm-hmm. Nobody wants to talk about getting older. Mm-hmm. Seasons don't change here. We don't put salt on driveways. We don't take winter clothes down and put summer clothes on. We do not do change well, right? But yet, within the industry, within the conversation between people, right, there was always this talk discussion about this disconnect, the information not smoothly streamlined over for the betterment of health and the carrying on of health as people transition from one thing to the other. How long ago was that, Johnny? Because I'm curious whether today we actually deal with this as an industry in a little bit better way, or are we still suffering from the same general melees of that disconnect?
I think it's a lot better now. That was probably somewhere around late 90s, early 2000s.
Okay.
It's a lot better now. The continuum of care is a lot better. The industry has changed quite a bit, and you have companies like ours that are able to go out there and to take care of not only seniors, 25-year-olds, 35-year-olds, 45-year-olds in their homes that are having issues.
So I'm going to ask you guys all one question. How much of what you do you feel is actually educational and providing that orientation and education? Because, we talk about it as being, caregiving, but I think people forget, and I have an idea how much it is, but I don't think it gets discussed enough, that part of the job, part of the commitment that you guys have for seniors and for the betterment of this industry or the continuity of care is this overwhelming continuous excitement about educating and enhancing, right? I mean, how much of your daily hours that you would say that part of it is passing on that information, informing somebody of resources? How much of it is it? Wow. Is it a good amount of your time?
I'd say that, in terms of what I do, I'd probably say it's 90% of what I do. It's quite a bit. I mean, we're doing, as a matter of fact, when we leave here, we're going and we're doing some Alzheimer's and agitation training at an assisted living community. And that's consistent. And Amy works well with the physicians, and I'm sure she can attest to, no matter how much we talk about it, no matter how much we talk about the care that's provided or that's available, we are continuing to find people every day who do not understand. Just like Paula said, folks who don't understand that it's available out there, what the resources that are available to them.
What do you think? What do you think? What do you think is at the bottom of that? Is it because people don't want to think about this until they have to? Is it because we're just not putting it out in the channels that have audience? What else? What could we do better, you think, in order to get that to be less what we encounter?
Sure. So I would say, I mean, to answer your first question that Johnny touched on, is I would say 90% of my time is educating as well, whether it's on the family side of things or whether it is with the physicians or even at assisted living. So everywhere and everyone we're encountering is not just explaining what service, one service we may be providing for them individually, but overall everything that could be put together in a care plan, psycho and social support, to help make sure that that is complimentary and that they're able to complete the program. But to touch on, I'm sorry, could you?
Well, I was just going to, you know, I'm just curious. I keep going back to AARP, you know, change their narrative, change their message, change the visuals on their message, and now they're pitching it in a different manner, right? And you know, I've noticed that even the ads that are geared to, you know, to baby boomers are starting to be younger baby boomers that are basically being visualized in those, in those ads, right? So how do we make this hunger for information that is super critical and it is unavoidable, every one of us is going to need to know? Okay, how do we make that something that people are interested to seek out versus to avoid like the plague until they absolutely have to? And I'm just, I'm throwing that out there. I'm not
the,
really looking for
that
a
that is the reality
answer.
Of it. I don't
how
think
do we
anybody
make aging,
wants to know about it till
for lack
have
of a better way of describing, you know, sexy enough that I want to find out about it.
Yeah. I think targeting all ages that are able to make a decision. Don't wait till the situation happens to you personally for you to be proactive on it.
Right.
And it's partnering with different companies and different services that can reach, like I said, all different demographics. And again, educating different doctors, not necessarily geriatric doctors, but these doctors that focus on detox, these doctors that have, you know, different type of patients that they see, and kind of explain to them so that we can continue to educate and promote what we can do to help.
But do you guys think, like, for example, I grew up in a multi-generational family, okay? The fact that people got old and they declined in health and cognitive awareness and all this stuff isn't something that was foreign to me. I encountered it, okay? Not to say that, that others didn't deal with it more closely, but I encountered it. This isn't something. So to be aware that this is something that happens that you need to basically educate yourself on is something that it just took to be a matter of fact.
But I didn't grow up seeing it.
My grandparents
were the few that I had. Most of them had died before I was born or when I was very little, because people died in their 60s back then, in the 1960s. I didn't have any experience with my grandparents, and if they did, they lived far away, and we saw them once a year. So I didn't have a day-to-day experience of watching Grandma decline and what it took to take care of Grandma. Grandma lived in Florida or someplace else, you know, and I never had to see her or deal with this. And when I did, it was for a very short period of time. So I think that's part of it, is that we have this notion that we put old people away and somebody takes care of them, and then out of sight, out of mind. And then the other thing is the baby boomers, as we've said many times in the show, we're the Peter Pan generation. I still dress like I'm 30 or 20. I don't want to think I'm ever going to get old or ever going to need this. I don't ever want to face it, think about it, deal with it.
Right, but you are at the same time facing it and dealing with it. And yes. what I'm saying is, and I'm just putting it out there for discussion now, later, whatever, is I think maybe it's a multi-generational message delivery. Maybe we should be engaging people that are multi-generational, not through only the physician and the industry, but through actually more societal, like we talked about a number of times, having like millennials and baby boomers having a town hall style thing where the discussion is happening. Because again, there's another factor. The baby boomer is a grandparent. The millennial is a grandchild. You take the parent out of the equation, and nobody has a resistance to either hear their parent or listen to their child. Now it's a grandparent-grandchild situation, and they might actually be a way to at least get an awareness to happen. This is my grandparents that are going to be facing this. Maybe I should know a little bit about it. okay, as part of my relationship with my grandparent. I'm just putting it out there because I think what we have done is great, but it's limited. Mm-hmm. If all the conduits and channels that we go through are the professional industry channels, that is not impacting a societal paradigm shift in how we talk about aging. We're still delivering it behind a door, through a window, through a form.
And let me give you another, a third dynamic that didn't happen in my case, but I hear happens all the time. Within the family, whose responsibility is it to take care of grandma, grandpa, mom, dad, Uncle Bob? Is it the oldest? Is it the one left behind when everybody moved off? Is it the only one who's not married or not working? You know, who is it that takes? You have a sister. Terrible happens in your family.
In most cases, it ends up being whoever steps up.
But there's arguments that happen over who does what.
Oh, I understand. And I don't want to get caught in that, Paul, so much because I do want to go back, before we run out of time, I do want to go back and talk about what differentiates grant care. Mm-hmm. And have our guests actually have an opportunity to basically share that. And we touched a little bit on the behavioral health aspect of it. We touched a little bit on the detox aspect of it. So if whoever would like to take either one of those and just give us a little
insight on what makes you guys different
in how you approach this.
I don't know what behavioral means, so you got to tell me that.
Yo, God knows we know you don't know what
behavior
Well, what happens with the behavior? You know, if you have a...
How do I get Paul to stop doing what he's doing?
We can help Paul.
Thank God. Leave your card.
No problem. I've already started to evaluate Paul.
You've already started?
He's got a case open on Paul.
I'll give you my card. You can call me later. Okay.
Well, you know, when you have a family member that has a wound, right, and they're at home, you send out a nurse to help them with dressings and such.
Right.
Same thing if a family member has knee surgery or hip surgery, we know we can send out a physical therapist. Well, what happens when someone has dementia? What happens when someone has Alzheimer's? Mm-hmm. They start to have MCI, you know, mild cognitive impairment. That's where we find a lot of families do not understand what is available. So what we've developed is a behavioral health program where we have a registered nurse who's mm-hmm. trained in behavioral health to go out and visit the family at home. Okay, and she's working under the care of a physician. It does not have to be a psychiatrist. It can be her internal medicine or family medicine mm-hmm. physician. And she goes out and she does evaluations with the resident just as she would is if it was a wound.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so then she'll make recommendations. She's looking at all the medications. She's looking at all the pill bottles that they have.
Yeah, right.
She's making sure that the discharge from the hospital that had a list of medications that they're all matching up. She is contacting the doctor, letting the doctor know what she found, and then making a plan of treatment.
But who initiates that and who pays for that?
Usually the one who initiates that is the physician. Mm-hmm. Or the hospitals that where they're being discharged. And then in terms of payment, for the behavioral health program, it's covered completely by Medicare, 100%.
Okay.
See, which is amazing because, I mean, yeah. I was going to say, well, but isn't that what a caregiver does? And I'm being facetious. I know that's not the case. That's mm-hmm. another layer of sophisticated service provision mm-hmm. that usually doesn't happen. And so that's wonderful. And most people may think, well, that's a kind of a luxury item that I can't afford. But
right.
to your point, it's actually
because that didn't happen mm-hmm. with my mom. As she got Parkinson's worse and worse, and then it seemed like she was developing dementia, or maybe she was just drug addicted, whatever it was. She got more and more distant and hard to communicate with. She would fall and go to the hospital. And they would discharge her, and a physical therapist would come. She'd have some other problem and have to go into hospital and then go to skilled nursing for a month, and then somebody would come and evaluate and stay with her. She would my dad would take her in and see a doctor and say, I don't know what to do, and he'd say, I don't know what to do either, and he'd take her home.
Well, you know, it's a fine line between when you're looking at behavioral health mm-hmm. and you have a resident or a person in the home who is agitated or confused. It's a fine line between keeping them from being agitated and being over-sedated.
Mm-hmm.
And so what happens is a lot of times they will go to their regular family medicine or internal medicine. They'll put them on a bunch of medications, and they'll do just what you said. They'll end up falling in the home.
Yeah.
It'll affect their eating. They won't eat as
right.
well.
All
they won't take care of themselves as well. So that's one of the things that I'm out there yelling all the time and screaming about it. And no matter how much I talk about it, like I said, every day there's someone who I'm educating about it. I have family members. I do Alzheimer's support groups in several in different counties. I have family members coming in all the time. You can almost literally see the weights on their shoulders where it's like, I had no idea this was available.
Because it is easy just to sedate them. Give me a pill.
Just sedate them, and that's it. Right. And you know, one of the other things that I've talked about recently is that the physicians, when they are being trained in medical school, how long do they spend on geriatrics? I know my daughter's in medical school, and I know how long they spend on
a day
on geriatric site. You're exactly right. A day, and you got to move on to the next topic. So pretty much everything that they learn is on the job. So if they're not exposed to it, now they're out there and they're treating.
Well, Johnny, you know, I mean, we touched on it a little bit at the beginning of the show. Like, you know, the regulations have changed in the industry, and we have tighter requirements now than we've ever had before, thank God. But it still blows my mind when you tell people how many hours are required to actually get certified to basically provide care, right? And in many cases, these agencies that were out there weren't even registered or certified
until very recently.
Mm-hmm. Right? I mean, do you want to shock the audience again and tell people how many hours are required? Because I still think it's way, way less than should be.
That's true. As a matter of fact, you know, sometimes we, when it comes to having, you know, we have a private side also where we provide the home care and the caregivers and CNAs. And it's funny, sometimes Kyla will call me or email me and she'll say, hey, I've just quoted a price. And then the family will reject the price, even if it's only a couple of dollars more than whatever agency they went to.
Right.
But you know, they don't want to pay for the care. And we're thinking, okay, well, would you rather go with an agency that has all of their caregivers licensed and bonded and is consistently training them on taking care of different types of patients?
Or go with the cheaper one.
Yeah, go with the cheap one.
And in some cases, and I will repeat this because we haven't talked about this in a long time. In some cases, when you take it upon yourself to do that and bring in a caregiver, there's
liabilities.
There's liabilities. There's tax regulations. There's things of that nature that many people are not doing.
You're the employer
now. Really come back and bite you for those extra dollars a month. But at the end of the day, it could be very costly for you. So how often is this behavioral oversight and evaluation happening?
The nurse goes out, and typically we like for her to go out a couple of times a week. Sometimes it's one time a week. It really just depends on what's needed. But the nice thing is that the nurse is looking at not only from the behavior, she's looking at nutrition, she's looking at bowel regimens, and she's dealing with medication management. She's looking at everything overall, and then she will make recommendations for the other disciplines. So maybe we do need that physical therapist in there to support while she's still coming in. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe we need a social worker, or maybe you were mentioning Meals on Wheels earlier. Mm-hmm. Maybe they're having issues with that.
Right.
And maybe she needs to call in one of our social workers to help set up Meals on Wheels or something like that.
My aunt recently got a call out of the blue from she went to the hospital. She goes to the hospital, seems 2-3 times a year, usually for falls or something. And somebody called up and said, I'm with some program, and it's a pilot program under Obamacare, whereby there's sort of an ombudsman, and it was only in certain communities, and where she lives out in the desert happened to be one of these test communities. And I'm still not quite sure what the program was. They called a few times, and I wasn't quite sure what to do, but they basically are trying to coordinate care between different agencies to make sure, because my aunt goes to see 3 or 4 different doctors. They never talk to each other.
Right. Mm-hmm.
In fact, they'll often say to her, what did the other doctors say? What did the other doctors say?
That's true.
Is she supposed to remember and communicate to them?
Well, that sort of outside-of-the-box thinking as far as what's not only the delivery of it, but the collection of information for the improvement of care.
Mm-hmm. Coordination.
And that continuity of an enhancement, possibly, if possible, requires that constant monitoring. And if it's happening in your home versus like in a facility, then who's doing it, right? And where's that information going? I mean, we had a couple of ladies that were here 2 weeks ago, and they basically are developing the protocol for provision of training, specialized training for massage therapists, specifically to provide service for seniors. Mm-hmm. Okay? And part of the byproduct of this is not that you're just getting a massage, but they are, unlike Meals on Wheels, for example, which is an amazing program, they are actually laying hands on the patient, on that lady, on that elderly, on that aging person, and they're evaluating lymph nodes, they're evaluating things like that in
that
the course of the provision.
Lymphoma, trying to work it out of your legs.
You know, and allowing that information to then pass back to whoever is needing to know about it, mm-hmm. because they're a point of touch for that person that may be shut-in, that may be, you know, and they're going to facilities. I don't know if they're doing it in-home, but I thought it was fascinating because I'm involved in the spa and wellness industry in my professional capacity as an interior designer, and it's fascinating to me that this protocol is being developed. Mm-hmm. Because what do you do when you're giving a massage to somebody who has dementia? Mm-hmm. And they basically completely forget where they were. How do you manage that if you don't have that specialized training, right?
Right.
And yet you care, and you, that's why, again, you know, a lot of people that are in the aesthetic and wellness industry have sort of similar characteristics, right? Just another form of caring. Mm-hmm. But it's fascinating that we are pushing those walls out, mm-hmm. and doing things a little bit differently.
So again, I just want to make sure I understand. So Grand Health...
Grand Care Health Services.
I've got it mixed up. Grand Care Health Services. Mm-hmm. You're trying to provide a behavioral specialist, a nurse, or somebody to go out and evaluate these people on a regular basis, but the doctor has to know that this exists and prescribe it.
Yeah.
And then you provide the people to do this.
Exactly. We do a lot of other things in that. I mean, obviously we do the standard home health, like right. I talked about before, right. physical therapy and such. But, you know, that's what we're talking about today. But yes, that's all under a doctor's care. We can't touch the patient without a doctor's care.
Right. Well, if the doctor doesn't know about this, they won't prescribe.
I was going to say, and what we'll do, and that's where Amy comes in a lot of times, is that we may get a call from an assisted living community, or maybe someone who's heard me speak,
right.
or one of my trainings, and they're at home taking care of their mom, and they may say, I think my mom needs your services, but... You know, what do I do from here? And then
right.
that's when Amy will contact a doctor. Sometimes we'll have mobile physicians that will go and see the patient and in order to evaluate and prescribe the home health.
And that's part of sophisticated, I would call it, caregiving and continuation of care. That is part of, I think, what then taps into the reduction of rehospitalization.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Exactly.
And which is almost, in a way, it's a step that is taken, but it's preventive.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Right? Which is, I think, a lot of the philosophy now is changing a little bit more.
Which is supposed to be the core idea of Medicare, and under everybody's, whether it's left or right, everybody's trying to say, let's keep these people out of the hospital, because hospital is the most expensive thing that you can do. So if we can get them out quickly, if we can keep them from coming back, hospitals even get... Don't they get penalized if they
come back quickly, and
all this stuff? And,
that's why that appealed to me when I saw that, because I know that at least currently is part of... You keep telling me to move the mic up.
Yeah,
that,
right.
Thank God people are not seeing you doing that.
Right. Listen, we're going to talk about detox in a second. I don't want to talk about alcohol.
Yeah. See this movement? We got a problem for detox with Paul.
He's already writing this in the mic.
Did you hide your bottles? Oh, he hid his bottles. That's a clear sign right there. Okay, but that's perfect transition. Let's talk about that.
Right.
Okay, because I know that that's another area that you guys focus on with the detox. So who wants to take that?
Sure. So, you know, the behavioral health side of things is just one aspect that leads us into the detox, especially in the senior community, that people are not educated on or aware that it's, a concern. A lot of these individuals, like we said, the senior community, are dealing with a lot of different medications. They're not getting the right, communication between each physician, what's being prescribed. Mm-hmm. So they're becoming non-compliant. Now, this doesn't just mean in the home setting. It can sometimes happen, when they're transitioning back into an assisted living community or an independent living community.
Right.
You know, we talk about the baby boomers and 55 and older communities where they're not really getting as much hands-on, and they're taking multiple different medications for different conditions.
And sometimes it could easily be also somebody who was the primary at paying attention to them has now become a different person.
Exactly.
And nobody bothered to do an orientation and a sort of handover.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
My mother added to pills. Nobody ever subscribed. Nobody ever pulled pills away.
Exactly.
She took a pill and was prescribed, and that prescription went with her for years.
Yeah.
And then the next doctor added to it, the next doctor added to it. So pretty soon she took a whole cocktail every day of of pills.
That's why it's so important to have a nurse come in. And you know, sometimes people think, well, what medications? I know what my parents are taking, but a lot of times we see this very often where, let's say, one doctor's prescribing five medication to them.
Right.
The nurse will come and do an inventory check, and the patient will say, wait, I have another bag over here that I take sometimes if I run out, and you don't know if it counteracts. So then that's why it's important that we share and tell all doctors what they're actually taking, because they don't know where.
And
the
one of the other things I noted, my parents lived out in Palm Desert. I lived out in Sun City. So I'd go out there periodically, obviously, and see their friends and whatnot. There's a lot of drinking going on out there.
Yes.
A lot of alcohol out there because they're lonely, because they're retired and they want to be happy, because they hurt, because a thousand reasons, because that was their generation. Mm-hmm. And, wow, there were a lot of them that were just getting car crashes and DUIs and all this stuff. Number.
So let's throw some statistics here, because if you guys have the numbers, I mean, how common is this? How big of a issue is this within the senior community where we have to be aware of it and actually address it?
Alcoholism and drug abuse.
I think it's a lot more frequent than people are willing to admit. You know, again, a lot of it is unknown, even in the home setting. The family member might think, you know, mom or dad is having a glass of wine here or there. But one or two glasses of wine in a senior citizen that's taking 12 to 13 different medications 2 to 3 times a day is deadly.
Yes.
You know, so it becomes a very serious matter. And I highly suggest to anybody that's taking care of a senior, just take a look at that situation when grandma or mom is having a glass of wine at dinner. What medications are they taking with dinner? Mm-hmm. Are they taking them before or after? So I think it's about the education side of things again. So, you know, I wouldn't want to throw out a percentage, but it's a lot more frequent than you think. And it doesn't have to be a high level of addiction. It doesn't have to be, you know, a bottle of
It's just a habitual compulsive.
And that's the key. Exactly. I'll share another thing. I've never shared this before, but my dad went to his grave thinking, I have no alcohol problem, but he did. Mm-hmm. Because for his entire adult life, he grew up in a world where you came home, you had a martini, and maybe two, and that's how you relaxed after work. And that was part of his ritual. It was an important component to him. He did it almost till the day he died. A couple times towards the end, he went and he was taking pills on top of that, obviously, as he got older and had problems. And he went into the hospital one time, and he started hallucinating. And went to the doctor and said, what the hell's happening? We called the doctor, and he says, well, he's detoxing off of 20 years of having a martini every day. I said, but he only ever has one. He's very... he was very adamant about it. I'm only going to have one. Years ago, I had two, but... He never had three or four or five or six or something here, so therefore he said, I have no alcohol problem. But the fact is he had taken it so long that he became dependent. And when he went in the hospital, he literally started hallucinating as he withdrew from this one martini a day habit.
Yeah, and
that
does
really
happen a lot.
Opened up, and so the last year of his life, he stopped drinking altogether.
So how do you guys address that? I mean, what do you guys do at Grand Care?
So with our in-home detox program, we have it's a different approach to specialize, not just to the senior community, but to anybody that's dealing with these sorts of addictions and doesn't want to go into a traditional setting. Mm-hmm. You know, the facilities and detox centers. Specifically, when you're dealing with the senior community, they don't, you know, they're in their 70s or in their 80s, whatever it may be. You know, a lot of these addiction centers are geared more towards the younger or aging community, but not anybody that's in the senior, you know, community that's 65 and above. So, you know, you can't take somebody, a 79-year-old that's been, you know, abusing unknowingly prescription drugs and things of that sort and put him in the same sort of a talk therapy group with a 20-year-old heroin addict or, you know, 30-year-old alcoholic.
Without naming anything, with the ocean view and the balcony.
You know,
and I'm going to sit there, and everybody around me is three-quarters of my age. Right? I mean,
you know, you can't do that to them. A, they're probably
they'll probably
very
drive them to drink, actually.
Yes. They're going to be non-compliant. They're not going to want... It's unheard of. I mean, you can only imagine having that conversation with your father. I'm sure he would be, you know, unwilling. So, and especially when it is an addiction that they weren't aware of until recently. So with our in-home detox program, it's customized and provided to them in a private setting, whether it's their home or, you know, setting of their choice, and it's specifically geared around their addiction, their age, how to deal with it. It's around-the-clock care for 5 days in that setting with an RN.
See, that's revolutionary. Honestly, that is really revolutionary.
That's totally revolutionary.
To deal, and we say this all the time, you got, if it was a child, oh my gosh, the floodgates of funding and support and everything, mm-hmm. just the sky just opened and right. everything came down to support that child. When it's a senior, to your point earlier, Paul, there's a certain sort of disposability. Mm-hmm. There's a certain whatever. Well, it's becoming harder to have a disposability attitude with somebody who's going to be around for another 15 years.
Yeah, mm-hmm. right.
Instead of three.
And they're
right?
adults. They don't.
And they're adults. So you're not going to deal with them like a teenager and punitively sort of basically try right. to get them to
you
break
stop
their habit.
Doing this, yeah.
Right.
Exactly.
And they've got their own means. Mm-hmm. So it's yes, like, right. oh, the heck with you. I'll just go, you know, I'm just going to go down the street. I can't drive. I can't see. But I'm still going to go down there to get my supplies, right?
Exactly.
So that's actually very revolutionary. So And the fact that you're taking the care sensitivity and applying it specifically to that population and age demographic, mm-hmm. but you're also realizing that it's not really limited.
Yes. No, it's not limited. I mean, we've the great thing about our program is that we've helped everything from a teenager that's, you know, going from high school trying to possibly had an injury and is on pain medication mm-hmm. but wants to get a college scholarship. Mm-hmm. He can't have a detox or a 30-day program on his record, a college student going mm-hmm. into the pros, things like that. So there is such a
Well, people surf, you know, and they have accidents. Next thing you know, they're basically incapacitated and cannot get around for a certain duration of time, and mm-hmm. that could easily be when that happens.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I also wanted to mention, sorry, Kyla, I also want to mention that, remember that when we detox, in our detox program, it's put together very quickly in terms of getting a nursing team out there and being able to handle that case. But it's also, it's done wherever that person is residing. So we've had you know, CEOs, and we've helped them detox within their organization in their corporate office.
Right.
We've had folks we detoxed in hotels because they didn't want, you know, anybody to see them. So wherever they're
now
at,
that clearly isn't paid for by insurance.
That's not clearly paid for by private.
Right. But so I'm going to ask a question though. Some people will say that the familiarity of environment, it actually would work against that and would empower them to continue their behavior. Mm-hmm. Okay? What do you say to that?
You got to break a pattern, you're saying, or something?
Well, I mean, some people will tell you, I got to extract you out. You know, I mean, you see it all the time.
Right.
Well, there's we just did an intervention, and we basically have a van outside, and we're going to usher you into the van, and you disappear for 3 weeks, and then, you know, whatever. I'm of a mindset that sometimes that's not necessarily true. Sometimes maybe the safety and sanctity of your home may actually provide you a calm environment in which you can reconnect. But how do you go about that? Because you guys are providing that service in most cases in possibly people's homes, right?
Mm-hmm. Correct. So I actually believe, and you know, based off of our results that we've seen over the last few years in dealing with all different levels of demographics and age groups, is that the triggers that, you know, bring these individuals to their addiction mm-hmm. or that are familiar and that are in the home, are when they're going to work, mm-hmm. are in their environment. You put somebody in a 30-day program, and mm-hmm. they're within four walls just dealing with what's going on within those four walls. Well, that's not what brought them to their addiction. That's
Correct.
Not where the loss or right. whatever it was that brought them to where they are today. So actually dealing with addiction and addressing it in the home. And again, this is a one-on-one basis. You're not in a room with 12 other people discussing and listening to their issues and concerns. It's an hour, two, 3 hours of, you know, in-home therapy a day. You're doing massage therapy, yoga, all these different things that are a part of our detox
See,
program.
See, there's hope, Paul.
Yeah. It's
wow. Come on over. No.
We'll put something together special for you, Paul. You know, we'll add some masseuses for you.
But, you know.
There you go. I like that.
I think the rest of us need a Paul prevention program.
Yeah.
Here, so, you know.
That's
but
don't be like Paul.
I thank you for saying that, because I just came across something very recently that, and this is an ongoing conversation, right? I mean, mm-hmm. If you take it to the next level of sort of community behavior and reaction and resistance and so forth to the resolution of addiction, right? Whether it be sober living homes or whatever, mm-hmm. there's this connect that happens, I think. And at the end of the day, people need to get care. And if you're in that situation, you're not just going to snap out of it. Okay, it's just not going to happen. I mean, you could be a stellar A student and have a surf accident, and next thing you know, you're basically a junkie and you need some help.
Pain pills, yeah.
And pain pills, right? So most people focus on the drug mm-hmm. as being the break in the addiction.
Yeah.
When it in fact is the triggers.
It is the triggers, yeah. Right. And so that's why we like to say...
And they're a substitution of the triggers.
And can I add one other thing, since we're talking mostly
with
about
the healthier alternative.
Or olding? There is a, and I can't, not if I put this into words correctly, but there is a feeling I got from watching my mom and dad and the caregivers that they saw, and now with my aunt, that the caregivers didn't have the same incentive to fix the problem as they would if you were 40. You're 40, this is a crisis. You're 20, it's really a crisis. Mm-hmm. You're 80, so she drinks, so she's a little out of it.
Oh, bless her heart.
Yeah,
you
whatever. There wasn't
Let's just mark the bottle so we know how much.
You better enjoy that quality of life.
That quality of life, got a couple years left, what the hell. There was a feeling of you're old, and I just don't have the same urgency to fix things.
And to be honest, Paul, to be honest, okay?
Yeah.
If that's what that person wants, great. Mm-hmm. But if that person is in that position, but it's not what they really want, and that's where, you know, they're doing all this stuff and they're still depressed, and they're still, you know, they're not just walking around happy-go-lucky, kind of, you know, luck of the Irish, and, you know, every day is a St. Paddy's Day parade.
Yeah,
I know, that's why I said that. But and if I didn't say it, you would have said it. But at least there's an alternative.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. And so
we got to wrap up.
Yeah,
here.
we got to wrap up. So let's go around the table again. I'll start with you since you got the mic, Kyla. Is what do you guys want to say? What are some of the parting ideas that you guys want to share with people?
And then we'll end by giving the website and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. Great.
Yeah.
I think I just want to end by saying, you know, these are things that people don't think about a lot. Yes, we are a multi-specialty in-home agency. We offer home health, skilled nursing, but you know, the behavioral health aspect of things, the detox, and looking at the medications and things of that sort, it's very important. It's a crucial part for all ages, from your 20s all the way to your 80s. So no matter who in your family is in need of care today, we're all going to need it at some point. So make sure you're paying attention to all of these things, including yourself, you know, right now. And, you know, find out what resources, and please reach out to us if you have any questions, if you think this may be a concern.
And what counties do you work in?
We work in L.A., San Diego, and Orange County.
Okay.
And they're, you know, from the valley to the border. So we'll definitely come out with you. And like we said, education. We'll come out and talk and just do an assessment and see if there is a need or help.
We got to get you out into the desert. That's
we do have
a multi-generational care agency.
Exactly.
How refreshing.
Like it's really exciting.
You're not being sort of segregated because you're senior and that's the only person you're going to get care.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Thank you. Amy, what would you like to say? I know you have a whole sheet. I'm looking at it here, you know, but what would you like to say?
No, but just what Kyla had just talked about is just educating and working with different organizations that see the importance of helping them, you know, with their psychosocial needs. That is the root of how to be able to help them have a quality of life.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times people think it's more of the obvious, which is your knees and your wounds, but sometimes it's the mental depression and things that we can work with that can give them hope.
Well, so, and the spiritual and the mental aspect of it gets an added level of complication when you start talking about ethnicities and backgrounds and things that
we didn't go to that.
Right, but I'm just trying to emphasize the point that Amy's making is that it has to be a holistic approach.
Yes.
It is not a medical, physical approach on its own. It has to be a holistic approach.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when you start now crossing into things that are like wellness and preventive care and self-care and all this stuff, which now sounds very empowering. Now sounds like that very cool thing that I should be aware of. I have an awareness of how I maintain a quality of life as I get older or I face life challenges that may be physical in nature, but I have to also be aware that when that happens to me, there's something happening in other parts of me that I also have to provide some attention to.
Exactly.
Yes.
Because you definitely feel like you lose control at that point in your life. If I watch my mom, my dad, my aunt. That's a very disruptive thing for most people. And yet, at the same time, you feel kind of, because you're helpless, you just sort of let it happen and hope somebody else will pick up the ball and
You're feeling worse because your pride comes in that you have to ask for help or you have to receive help. And if you're not wired to receive, then, you know, that's another aspect. All of a sudden, at this point in your life, after, you know, giving, but never really being able to receive, now you got to basically start receiving.
Right.
I mean, I can only imagine the mental stuff that does to you.
So you're saying if we became empowered earlier and had plans for this and awareness of this stuff in place, then we would take control of our lives for a much longer period of time, maybe through the end of our life.
And that's exactly what I'm saying.
Right. Yeah.
And that's where the message needs to be equally. I mean, there's sort of an immediacy that is needed for care, but I think that's the message that really needs to resonate louder and louder every year.
Okay.
Johnny?
Well, it's all like you talked about it when you said connecting the millennials with the senior generation.
Mm-hmm.
you know, taking out that middle part. I think it's huge. I would like to say that, you know, no matter what situation a person is in, there's always help. There's always help, and you know, we come across it every day, and we take care of it, and we bend and mold and figure something out. But you know, I've dealt with a lot of folks, and like Paul has said earlier, unless you've dealt with it, you have absolutely no idea.
No
the
idea.
Businesses that surround us, unless they've dealt with anyone who has dementia or Alzheimer's or any types of those issues, they have absolutely no idea how hard it is to deal with that. You know, it's a consistent day-to-day thing. You know, it doesn't stop when you're tired and you're ready to go to sleep at 10
or
hours.
Or you cross it off your to-do list.
Exactly. It doesn't stop.
You're not ready to handle it. You're not ready emotionally. You're not ready physically. You're not ready financially. All these things impact you. You have to change in roles. You're the parent, and you're taking care of them, and they're resistant to them, and they're depressed, and they're doing all
these
things.
We live in a society where everything is instantaneous, right?
Yeah.
So for me, it's, we got an issue. We're going to sit down. We're going to talk about it. I'm going to make a list.
Done.
We're going to cluster off. We're going to make a decision. We're going to look up a website, make a call, and then I'm moving on to my life, right?
Yeah. Right.
This is not the case this. Right. But, I mean, this is kind of the funny, we laugh about this, but it's really part of modern living, and you got to readjust your mind that this is its own entity, right, and how to find the ability to both ask for help. You don't need to know what that help needs to look like, but to allow yourself to ask for help and let somebody guide you to that.
You know, one of the most frustrating things is, as you deal with people when they get older, my mom, my dad, now my aunt, they're not rational anymore. My dad was the most rational man I ever knew in life. The end, he wasn't rational. It was all emotional. It was how he felt. My aunt right now is going through this. Here we are doing this. I'm going to drive out on Monday, and we're going to look again at possibly assisted living facilities. We've looked at them 10 times, the same one. And every time she says, no, I hate that. I'm not going to go. And then 3 weeks later, she calls me up crying and says, I got to go. So we're going to go back out and look at the same place that we've looked at 10 times already here. And all the issues are going to come up again. I'm not ready. I don't like it. I don't want to be there. You know, and then I say to her, okay, then don't call me in 3 weeks and say how scared you are.
So how often
and over again, so you get so crazy.
So how often do you go out there other than when you go to visit facilities?
I try and go out. I talk to her every day.
Okay.
If nothing else, just to see if she's okay. And then I try and go out once a week, once a month at most, somewhere in that neighborhood. Yeah, I make an effort to go out there. Probably not at this point, the winter not so much because for a variety of reasons, I don't go out there during the. I have another place to stay in the summer, but it's rented right now here. So if there's
so basically, you know, like I go with my parents to lunch every Sunday. You have this sort of repetitive pattern with your aunt. Mm-hmm. Basically, you go visit facilities every 3 weeks.
Pretty much.
So it's part of her socialization.
Yeah. Yeah. And we go through. I did this with my mom. In various other ways, we go through these maddening arguments over and over and over and over again. Whereas 20 years ago, my dad would or mom or my aunt would have just made a decision.
Mm-hmm.
But because they're not, they've changed, and they don't want to make more changes, and they can't come to grips with these things, and so it doesn't just get done, which adds to my frustration level, which adds to my resistance to go do it for the 14th time.
And that's what the emotional aspect that you're talking about, and we only talked about it relevant to the person that is in receiving
care.
How
many times can
we
talk about
it? All the people that are around them that are also impacted?
Paul, we addressed that a few years back. I know we had put together a program for assisted livings that it was called Now Is Not the Time. And that's exactly what
perfect
it is.
Perfect name.
Now is not the time.
Yeah, okay.
And so these families would come in, either from the assisted livings or from the surrounding neighborhoods, and they talk, and we talk about how do you have that conversation? When is the time? You know, because...
For example, my aunt, just the type of things that come up that you think, who cares? My aunt can barely move around. She's totally alone. Meals on Wheels are the only people that visit her every day. She lives in an apartment out there by herself. She moved out there because she had a deadly form of blood cancer that was supposed to have taken her life 20 years ago. But the doctor died, and she's still alive.
Wow.
She moved out to be with my mom and dad for the final years of her life, except my mom and dad died. And so now she's totally alone. There's no other relatives. There's nobody out there. And she knows she shouldn't be there. The doctor tells me she shouldn't be there. She falls all the time. I know she shouldn't be there. And yet we go to the facility, and part of it's money. But mostly it's, I'm not ready for this. Mm-hmm. Mostly it's, I don't like what I see. It's a bunch of old, you know, doddering old people, and that's not me. It's, I have to give up all my wonderful things. I look around this sea of junk that she's collected over 80 years, and I say, I'm just going to throw it away someday. But she has an emotional attachment. She has to give all that up. It's this change. It's this acceptance. It's this dealing with it. So she puts it off and puts it off and puts it off until something happens, and then we go out and look again. See, and then she gets scared, and we go, don't do anything. And then we've done this 14 times. We're going to do it again on Monday.
It's so great that we have this platform that we can mm-hmm. share that with,
yeah.
because I will tell you, that rawness is not what we usually hear.
Yeah. No.
And that's more academic usually.
Yes, mm-hmm. right.
That's a perfect example. Your aunt is a perfect example of where the behavioral health care plan comes in. When she transitions finally, when we make that decision, yeah. I wish you luck in that, because I know that it's very difficult, is not only the behavioral aspect at home, but when she transitions into those assisted livings, to touch on what Johnny said, we have programs, transition programs with a lot of memory care and assisted livings, mm-hmm. because when they transition into that community, although they are getting assistance and there's a lot of other residents and there's activities, and they become very secluded and they're scared to come out, and you know, yeah. it's like being the new kid at school again.
Exactly.
You know, who do I talk to? Do I have friends? Things like that. So that's where the behavioral part comes into it for her as well, so you can make sure that that transition is smooth for
her.
And
I could see if she would do that, because for example, in this assisted living, she has to go down and eat with other people. She hasn't eaten with anybody else. She's lived alone for her whole life. She's never got married, doesn't have any kids. So her whole life, she's eaten when she wants. And she's like, the whole notion that I have to go down to dinner at 6 o'clock, I don't want to eat dinner at 6 o'clock. Maybe I want to eat it at 8 o'clock.
I am dealing with that right now, Paul. Okay, we were brought on board to do the design on a 80,000 square foot facility that's going up in Stanton, that's a 110, 120 bed facility, three-story. Memory care,
mm-hmm.
wow.
okay? And the crazy thing about it, and I'll speak to your point, is that we're talking about in every floor there is a dining area.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, first question for me in terms of efficiency is, why every floor has a dining area? Why
right.
can't you just combine this, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, because the people that they have talked to that are on the provision or the operator side don't want to have people leave the floor that they are on.
Hmm.
Everybody needs to be on the same floor, on that floor that they live. So they sleep, they wake up, they live, they go. There's nothing that, okay?
Right.
And I'm dealing with the design side, and I'm reading, and I'm trying to incorporate things that engage people to behaviorally or, you know, like
socialize.
Actually walk around and socialize,
mm-hmm.
to give them senses of orientation and change of time through lighting of when it's daytime and nighttime, even though they may not be looking out of a window.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm taking it to that level on design, and on the operator side, I'm hearing, no, everybody should go into the same dining room. And I'm like, okay, so could we have two seatings?
Right.
No, everybody needs to be in the dining room at the same time.
Yeah.
And I'm
that
thinking, this is 2017, yeah. and we are treating these people like they're not even... It's like, yeah. I'm in boarding school,
yes.
and
yes.
That's the only time...
I'm in prison. So my aunt hates that. And then she hated the fact, so we went and had lunch there one day. This was a couple of years ago when we started this. And two little old ladies immediately came over and started talking to her, and I thought, oh, great, so she's going to have friends. No, she hated that. So oh, my goodness, now they're going to come over and knock on my door, and I'm going to have to come down, and they're going to try and control me and tell me what to do. I'm not going to do that.
Yeah.
I'm not going to put up with that. I'm not going to have people fighting over me and tell me what to do and who to sit with and all this stuff here. I'm not back in high school again here.
Yeah.
So all of those things, you say, but that's petty little stuff. That's what's keeping her from moving.
Of course. That's independent decision of
yeah.
her life and
right.
control.
When
and
I eat, who do I eat with?
Slipping away the minute she walks through that door and signs off. Her independence.
Exactly.
That's
right. How do people find out about you guys? Where do they get more information? Yona, who wants to provide that website, all that good stuff?
Sure. Well, our website is www.grand, that's G-R-A-N-D, carehealth.com. And, you know, through that website, you can connect and get contact information, you know, regarding what representatives are in which area, whether you're in L.A., San Diego, or Orange County, and they'll connect you to somebody to answer any questions. Myself, Amy, and Johnny are always available also.
Sure, yeah. Sure. I was going to ask for a phone number.
Sure, yeah. So phone number to reach me would be 714-469-0058. And don't hesitate to call on the weekends. You know, like we said, this industry does not turn off.
Come on. Nobody calls on the weekends.
Contact us whenever you have questions. You know, we're always available. Like I said, healthcare and questions about taking care of your loved one. Don't stop 9 to 5 Monday through Friday. And we understand that.
Mm-hmm. That's wonderful. Thank you so much, everybody, for being here. I think this conversation, it's always the case with the show, this conversation is supposedly going to go down a certain direction, and then we end up finding these other little pockets that really are interesting to explore. So I appreciate you guys exploring them with us today, and I'd put out an invitation for you guys to come in or call in if there's anything that's interesting of this nature. We're always looking for something to engage people, to delve deeper, to look beyond the
limitations. And I'll tell you where this show would love to go, and we've talked about this, and we haven't been able to do this. We have people come in and talk about the service, and obviously, I know, you want to promote it, you want to make people aware of it, you want to spread the message. I think the next step is to get people in who've used it, testimonials, to get people who've actually experienced. Like me, I try and provide the testimonial in the room here of what people are going through. Because it's one thing to say you need this, and you can do it, but as your guest said, until you go through it, you'd really have no idea what you're in for. And I think more and more people should be educated about what they're potentially in for. And that might scare them into it. Might get them to start thinking about it.
Well, but
I wish I had a long time ago.
It's unavoidable. So if it's unavoidable, you're going to have to deal with it. So maybe after you're scared out of your wits about it, you then realize that maybe there's a way to better improve your ability to deal with it by educating yourself. I'm going to say that if you do have that to share, and you're not in necessarily as guests on the show, you can always call in and say, hey, you know, and we would love to share that on the air. You know,
we're looking for stories.
Under normal conditions, we usually will take a break in the middle of the show.
Yeah.
So that's a good time.
We started
a little
late today.
But we started a little late with technical difficulties, so we went through. But please feel free to do that. You can contact me via email. And I know Deborah has my email, but I'll give it out on the air as well. It's Rod, R-A-A-D, period, Gantus, G-H-A-N-T-O-U-S, at gmail.com. Did I just almost say AOL?
Yeah.
At gmail.com. Boy, that's how long I've been on the online. And you can reach me on my cell, 949-212-8299. If you have any feedback to our guests or any questions, by all means, you know, reach out to Kylie, but also to me. And you can check out their website. It's actually a great website. I looked at it. So, again, it's grandcarehealth.com. And look for us on Facebook, and we are now on YouTube as well on OC Talk Radio. And give the phone number, Paul, to the show, to the station, in case people want to call.
949-330-7760. Operators standing by.
Thank you, everybody, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you.
You have been listening to the Rad Life Radio Show with your host and age explorer, Rad Gontos, brought to you on the one and only OCTalkRadio.net. Join us again next week as we continue our journey of discovery into life's challenges, opportunities, options, and all the latest and greatest things that come with getting older.